You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This podcast is brought to you by Stella Artois. When you're planning to enjoy everything Houston has to offer, especially all the great restaurants in our city, start with Estella. Whether you're going to eat with friends or solo, start with Estella. Stella Artois. Enjoy responsibly. Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler. Hope everybody had a happy Thanksgiving and a good holiday. This is the Tuesday show where we talk about some news in the restaurant world, as well as a couple of meals at restaurants we think you will want to know more about. To do that, I am joined by my co-host this week. He is a Houston hospitality veteran and a co-founder of the Houston Barbecue Festival, Michael Fulmer. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
Doing great. Recovering from the holidays. It's like smoothies and hot tea now.
Yeah, it's just salads, just nonstop salads for the next few days. All right, let us dive right into the news of the week. Topic number one, Dallas Tex-Mex restaurant Mi Cocina is now open in the former Seasons 52 space on Westheimer. Michael, let me just throw it to you. I mean, we have a lot of Tex-Mex in this town. So what are your expectations for Mi Cocina, which we should note had a brief run kind of in the Briar Grove Memorial area in the aughts. They were in the Woodlands in the 20 teens with sort of mixed results, but they're back for real this time. This is the no bullshit, full throttle, huge 10,000 square foot restaurant, you know, the whole shebang. So what do you think? I mean, what will it take for Mi Cocina to establish a permanent beachhead here in Houston?
It's just having the right location in this case. I mean, I don't know that Houston will ever plateau when it comes to Tex-Mex, because that's everybody, you know, everybody wants one in their neighborhood. Everybody has one in their neighborhood. And, you know, there's just kind of a limitless desire for it. I mean, I'm right there with them on that. You know, it's usually my go-to meal when I get back from a trip is like, I just want that comforting Tex-Mex, you know, experience. In the case of Mi Cocina, you know, going over into the River Oaks, kind of Highland area. I mean, what's over there? Escalante, I guess. The River Oaks area doesn't have a Tex-Mex place in that. So they're filling a hole there. And, you know, I guess time will tell to see whether or not they succeed. I think they will. It's a great location. And I think, as I said before, I think there's kind of a limitless desire for Tex-Mex. It's always kind of a default setting for the majority of diners in this town.
Yeah, no, I think you're on track. I mean, you're right. There is not Tex-Mex in River Oaks District specifically, which is the massive development that Mi Cocina is opening next to. Yes, Escalante is in Highland Village. You know, if you push a little farther afield, right? If you kind of stretch the radius to a mile or two, well, you know, Cyclone Anaya's is busily building out a new location where Frank's Americana used to be. You go a little farther down Westheimer, you get to the Chewy's that's been on across from Lamar High School for as long as I can remember. You know, you hop down to Richmond, you've got kind of the Tex-Mex trio, Pico's, Little Papacito's, and El Tiempo. Come back towards Greenway Plaza, there's Valencia's Tex-Mex Garage that opened last year. You've got the new Los Tios at West Park and Buffalo Speedway that opened earlier this year. Cross 610, you've got the Ninfas at San Felipe and Post Oak. And then I suppose if you absolutely must, there's Blanco, that Mexican restaurant in the Galleria. But I think that's going to be like the Godfather 3. I think we're just going to pretend that doesn't exist. So, you know, in that universe, right, with all of these choices, I think kind of the things that Mi Cocina does well, right? Like it's mostly located in kind of affluent Dallas neighborhoods. And so, you know, we think about kind of in that sense, like food is important, but food is also a little bit secondary to experience, right? Like if they have great customer service, you know, they're known for their Mambo Taxi, you know, a frozen margarita with a sangria swirl. If the drinks are good, if the service is good, I've seen some pictures of the interior. It looks really nice in there. It doesn't look like Seasons 52, thank God. So I think there's a niche, right? Kind of an upscale Tex-Mex, kind of a companion to some of the, you know, the late night type shenanigans that goes on at the restaurants in River Oaks District. I think that alone, you know, if it's sort of the Tex-Mex Boss Cat Kitchen, right? Like great service, great drinks, pretty good food, lively atmosphere. I think they'll do just fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think you mentioned everything kind of in the order of which people desire it there, which is, you know, in that area, it's an experience. It's like a vibe, as we say, you know, and these sort of alcohol fueled experiences are what dominate. It's not to say that there's bad food there all the time, but it's definitely, you know, it's a tertiary or secondary thing to what, you know, those other priorities are, which are, you know, I want a good vibe. I want a good cocktail. I want good service. And so, yes, if you want to compete well, you should bring good food, but those other things are definitely the priority for that area.
Absolutely. All right. Anything else on this?
No, I mean, I think I ate at Mi Cocina a gazillion years ago. So of course I'll go back. I'll always try another one. But I think like everyone who's listening here, we all have a favorite Tex-Mex place in our neighborhood, and that's our go-to place. So, you know, as far as them being destination, I think it's more that environment is destination worthy, the high-end shopping, the iPic cinema, you know, everyone's coming back, you know, pretty strongly in terms of the retail places. So I think that's their crowd.
No, I think that's right. Yeah. I have never been to a Mi Cocina. I'm excited to try it. You know, I'll go for brisket tacos. I'll get my Mambo Taxi. I'll see what's up. But yeah, I think this is kind of, you know, I don't think it's going to crack Little Papacitos or more on point Candente in my personal rotation, but I'm open to being surprised.
But what you're putting out there is just saying you're going to take one for the team.
Daddy, it's what I'm required to do. This is the life I've chosen.
Daddy, get in there.
All right. Topic number two, El Bolillo has opened its new location in West Houston and the Mission Bend neighborhood, which is kind of near A-Leaf on Highway 6. It is the largest bakery in the company. It's also the first one with a patio, so you can sit outside and sip a cup of coffee and have a concho or a bolillo or a cookie or a piece of tres leches before you move on about your day. Michael, I mean, I've only ever been to the El Bolillo on Airline Drive, which is kind of the original location. So I won't claim to have a ton of experience with this, but what are your thoughts on El Bolillo going to West Houston?
There's a couple of interesting dynamics. I mean, it wasn't that long ago Houston didn't have a decent bakery. You know, I mean, I say that, I think, with all veracity that, you know, and that's changed. And so the bar's gotten higher. El Bolillo has, certainly a loyal clientele. I mean, I go there specifically just to get tortillas. I'm not real big on what kind of soles and panderos. Just not really my thing. And so I don't think they're just playing to, Hispanic or Latino audience, that these things have integrated themselves well into the cuisine here, not just in Houston, but in Texas. And so there's just a real wide swath of people who really enjoy that. So they seem to have several. I mean, how many do they have? Is it three or four in the city now? Or?
Yeah. So this is the fourth, and it's 12,000 square feet. So they're not messing around. They're coming strong to Mission Bend.
I think that speaks also to the, you know, doing the whole catering and getting people who are doing custom desserts, people who want tres leches and that kind of thing to go. That, you know, there's no shortage of people who enjoy that. They do a good job, you know, and like I said, they're already well established. So I think it's a good move.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think of bakeries as kind of a morning and afternoon kind of situation, but all of these Albalia locations are open from 6 a.m. until 10 p.m. So, you know, when you get that like after dinner tres leches craving, they're there for you. I think that there's something really admirable about that. They talk about, you know, they have over 100 different items, empanadas. You mentioned tortillas. Certainly they're known for their conchas. Obviously the bolillos, the rolls that they make every day. And there's a commitment to craft there that I can really respect, even if I'm not a frequent El Bolillo shopper. I will say, you know, I remember touring the airline drive location once as part of a foodie group outing. And I remember looking at those bolillos and thinking like, oh, you know, this would be like kind of a nice alternative to the Kaiser rolls that I sometimes buy at Three Brothers. You know, this was right after one of the hurricanes and Three Brothers had flooded and they were rebuilding. And so I thought, oh, you know, this will be a nice alternative, you know, to take to my mother's house on a Sunday morning. And then I saw that every roll got a nice layer of lard to give it a nice crunchy crust right before it went in the oven. And I thought, oh no, I can't take a lard covered roll into my mother's kosher home. That's just not going to fly.
Well, they do kolaches and, you know, tamales. These are all things that, you know, people will eat there, but they're also, I mean, that's big to go business.
Absolutely. All right. You know, I'm going to say that does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurants of the week. Stick around. Michael, for our restaurants of the week, I want to talk to you about three places. Let's start with Rumi's Kitchen. This is the new upscale Persian restaurant that opened on Post Oak. It comes to Houston from Atlanta, where they have three locations. You know, I'm going to say we had a pretty good dinner at Rumi's Kitchen. What did you think just kind of walking in and looking around? What were your first impressions?
First of all, it's a beautiful space. You know, you know when you see restaurants that throw a lot of money into something and it's just high-end decorations, maybe it's not really necessarily cohesive or coherent. In this case, man, it's beautiful. Like whoever designed that place, you know, they earned their paycheck because it's gorgeous. It feels really comfortable. It feels opulent without being like kind of disaffected. Like I feel really comfortable going there in a casual kind of vibe, but it's also someplace you could go on a date or in a more, you know, for a more formal occasion. So it has that kind of versatility, you know, dining in the bar too. And, you know, that location, it's just, it's beautiful. And that's a very warm kind of thing to walk into without, you know, like a scene, like without feeling disaffected from the high end, you know, that's not always the easiest thing to do. And as far as I'm concerned, they kind of hit the nail on that. They really did it for interior.
Yeah. You know, I think that's well said. You know, it occurs to me it's in the same building as Uchiko, which is just a gorgeous, really opulent kind of environment. And so if you're going to open in that building, then you need a design that sort of stands up to your neighbor. And I think they achieve that. You know, what I like is, as you mentioned, is there's kind of three distinct spaces. There's the bar area that's a little more casual. There's the main dining room with a view of the kitchen. And then there's a pretty big private dining room that we saw people taking advantage of when we were there. So, you can kind of tailor your experience around where you sit. And then talk to me about food. I mean, what stood out to you from our meal? Because we ate pretty extensively.
Yeah, people who have eaten food from that area, from that cuisine, when you look at what, you know, Iranian, Lebanese, you know, that Eastern Mediterranean area, you know, lots of small dishes that are appropriate for sharing. And the beginnings that they have there were right on time. You know, the eggplant, the tremolo we had was delicious. I think we had a smoked eggplant too, and some tahini. And the flatbread they did, this really impressed me. Flatbread, you know, which is it's an unleavened bread. There's no yeast in it. Can sometimes just come across like a cracker, almost like a matzah, if you will. And in this case, it had just a little bit of softness to it. It had great texture and flavor, and it worked so beautifully with all these, you know, for lack of a better word, like almost like dips, if you will. Just delicious. And then I think we got some small lamb ribs, and yeah, sign me up for lamb ribs every time. One, you don't see them very often. They're hard to source and they're hard to execute well because of what the amount of meat that's on there. And it had just this like glaze on it, you know, God, I could eat those every day. So the starters all were kind of home runs for me. And then we went into entrees. Sea bass was cooked perfectly. It was moist. It was delicious. Tasted fresh.
We had the kebab. We had that stew. I mean, you know, I liked a lot of what we tried.
Yeah, I did too. The sides we had, the rice was good. It was well cooked. The chutneys had distinct flavor without being, you know, over the top. The thing that, you know, I think we'll get to this is that, you know, like kind of their showstopper is their pomegranate short rib. You know, it's almost $150, you know, and obviously it's meant to be shared. And it does say it has a pomegranate glaze, but at least for my taste, the glaze was overwrought in this case. It was the short rib was cooked perfectly. You know, it was soft, it tore apart, it had distinctive beef flavor, you know, it was good quality beef. But that glaze just overwhelmed it completely. I have no problem with the pomegranate glaze, but this was just, for at least for our experience, I thought it was too much.
Yeah, you know, it's the one thing that, you know, I posted that picture of the pomegranate short rib, and I got a couple messages from people who said that when they ordered it, it didn't have as much glaze, or it didn't look like it had, their version had as much glaze as the one we were served. And I wonder if maybe in an attempt to impress us, they went a little bit overboard on the pomegranate, because you're right. It was too sweet. Like, I like kind of sweet meat. Like, I, you know, I grew up eating tzimmis and some of these other kind of classic Jewish dishes that run a little bit sweet. But yeah, it was, even for me, it was a little bit too sweet, but so many good things. I mean, the kebab was killer. You mentioned the bread. I really like that. You didn't mention the roasted tomato dish that we had with the labneh that I really liked.
Right.
We had the mushroom hummus that I really enjoyed. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, just a whole lot to like on this menu. And you know, I kind of cross-referenced. I went to a more traditional, more casual Persian restaurant kind of on my own a couple weeks ago. And, you know, I think the Rumi's dishes hold up really well. They're obviously more expensive. You're obviously paying for the presentation and the ingredients and the design and all that stuff. But I think it's still like a pretty decent value. You know, I think that they... On the overall experience, I think they really deliver. And I know I've seen several of my Persian friends going there multiple times. And so I think that speaks really well of what they're trying to achieve.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly concur. I've talked with several of my Persian friends too, and they really enjoyed it for the most part. And we talk about that one thing. Is it a value? Was the money you spent kind of commensurate with the experience? And I felt like it really was. Like they deliver. You know, the service was spot on. They have a really strong drink program, you know, and if you want to have a wine experience, there's no shortage. They have great depth and somewhat breadth on the wine list. And it was, you know, reasonably priced. It's still kind of the standard markup there, but, you know, that's the way that goes. And then the desserts we have, you know, nothing to really phone home about, you know, on that one. They had a Persian ice cream sandwich that I enjoyed, but, you know, nothing really spectacular in my eyes. I mean, I enjoyed them, but meh.
Yeah, I don't know. That ice cream sandwich was pretty killer. I would go back for that ice cream sandwich. That was the one thing that stood out. And they had that, I think it was like a honey cake with strawberries on it that I also enjoyed. I mean, yeah, I think, you know, the desserts were kind of good enough, but yeah, that ice cream sandwich was, with the saffron ice cream was really killer.
Yeah, they did that. And we, you know, we had the tea service, that was delicious. It was just wonderful. I, you know, when I lived up north, I drank a lot of tea, you know, and once I moved away from like a winter area, I'm a coffee guy all the way now. It's rare that I drink tea, you know, except maybe, you know, in a Chinese restaurant. And Man, it was, I would have that tea every time, you know, I went back there. It was just wonderful.
Absolutely. All right. So then, as we always say, the standard is, will you go back?
Yeah. Yeah. I would definitely go back.
Yeah. I agree with you. I can't wait to go back. All right. And then I want to talk to you about, for our second restaurant, I want to talk to you about Comalito. This is the new taqueria that replaced Wild Oats in the Houston Farmers Market. It is led by Chef Luis Robledo Richards, who is a pretty accomplished guy. He's been named the best pastry chef in Latin America several years ago. He's been a judge on a Netflix cooking competition. I mean, you know, when I was in there, I saw a group of people, you know, taking pictures with him, right? They know who he is. They were very excited to see him. You know, maybe Houstonians who aren't quite as plugged into the Mexico City dining scene may not be quite as aware of his reputation. But this is, I think, a nice development for the farmers market and for Underbelly Hospitality, which partnered with Chef Luis on this restaurant. But I don't know, let me throw it to you. What did you think of our lunch at Comalito?
It's really promising. One, it's, you know, it's aggressively priced. And when I say that, I mean, it's the prices are low. You know, they know that there's food trucks everywhere and there's places to get tacos from as low as, you know, $2, $3, $4. So, you know, yes, it's a sit down place and you're going to get a little bit more because you are having more of an experience and they are, you know, they offer more, but they're not turning it into this like, oh, we are a luxurious taco experience. It's like they're, you know, it felt great, you know, in the environment in there. And the tacos were really solid that we had. The pastor I really enjoyed. There's a couple they didn't have because we were there early before they really got going. You know, I really want to try the lengua. The parrilla, you know, the grilled meats that we had that they brought the tortillas out. We had a marinade skirt, I believe, and a pork rib that was a chuleta that was delicious. But more importantly, those tortillas, you know, they're making them right there. Yes, they're nixtamalized, and yes, they are delicious. And that alone is enough for me to come back. But there's just it's a really deep menu in terms of what they offer. And that's very compelling.
Yeah. And I like that they're doing, you know, the coaster tacos with the crispy cheese. Like you said, they're making their tortillas. They're using heirloom corn from Mexico that they're nixtamalizing. I think that's kind of the new standard now for kind of the modern chef driven taqueria in this town. Right. Like that's kind of the minimum point of entry if you want to be taken seriously. You know, certainly Cochinita & Co. is doing that. Popolo at Finn Hall downtown is doing that. So that's kind of the new standard. And so I appreciate that. You know, you mentioned that quesadilla with the blue corn tortilla and the mushrooms. I thought that was really standout. They come with, I want to say, three different salsas, all of which we enjoyed, you know, with various levels of heat, like the, you know, that habanero that's got a little more zip to it, but it's kind of a sweet spicy that I really enjoyed. And then, you know, the cocktails have been a little bit of a work in progress. Like you said, we went pretty early on, but I think they'll get that dialed in, you know, in terms of getting their margarita, their paloma, all that stuff kind of sorted. And, you know, like you said, I think that the pricing's pretty aggressive. You know, a basic pastor taco, I think is $3.50 or $4. You know, it's a street style. It's a smaller serving, but again, you can get a platter with enough pastor to kind of make yourself for lunch or split for $15, $16. And I think that's competitive. I think, you know, as we sort of think about the farmer's market and the way it's been redeveloped, I mean, people still go there to shop for inexpensive produce that's kind of trucked in from all over. And so, you know, an accessible taqueria that's kind of grab and go, or you order it kind of dim sum style, you fill out a piece of paper with what you want, and then it comes out. You know, I think that makes a lot of sense for that development, and certainly more sense than a kind of family focused, more upscale comfort food restaurant.
Yeah. And they didn't see, they weren't shying away from like bringing the stuff that clearly the chef, you know, has grown up with, and, you know, having, you know, the tripas, you know, tripe, you know, some of the
lengua. Yeah. They've
got cachete, the beef cheek, you know, exactly. And I'm all in for, I'm not a tripe person, so I'm not going to have that, but, you know, I still like to see it on there because I know there's people who enjoy that. And they're saying, you know, we're not going to dumb this down. We're going to make the food that we love. And that always, to me, kind of is a successful formula, or potentially successful formula, when people, we're going to say that cook from the heart. They cook with the passion of what they are. You know, when that translates, it's wonderful.
Right. I think that's all well said. The only thing we haven't mentioned is the best thing we ate there, which is undeniably that churro, which was just like crispy and crunchy and so fluffy. Like, I don't know what they do to make that churro so fluffy, but it was outstanding. I'd go back just for the churros.
It's some of the best churros I've ever had, you know, and the churro game in this town has just been on a steady rise upward, which is I'm all in for that. That's a beautiful thing to have happen. And yeah, I agree. They're so good. I would go back after a meal somewhere and say, hey, we're just here for the churros. It's like they're that good.
Yeah, we're here for the churros and a cup of coffee. And, no surprise. Lewis is a pastry chef by training. And, they're going to roll out breakfast and brunch service pretty soon with his pastries and you know, the pictures of the croissants and some of the other things that he's been working on. They look great. And I can't wait to go back and try that stuff.
And having that trompo there, you know, the meat that's been slow braised on a turning spit, you know, that's very problematic because of how the Houston Health Department treats it. You know, you couldn't, for the longest time, you couldn't even find trompo inside the city limits. And then what was needed to do it, to like encase it in like a plastic, you know, container. It was just kind of ridiculous. But so they have it reset behind, you know, the line. And there's, man, trompo meat, you know, that's been slow braised and is just shaved off. Yeah, I'm all in on that.
No, absolutely. All right. And then just briefly, I want to talk to you about Burnt Bean Company. This is a barbecue restaurant in Seguin, Texas, which is outside of San Antonio. It was in the top five of the 2021 Texas Monthly Top 50. We know their pitmaster, Ernest Cervantes, who I think is going to be a guest on this podcast at some point in January. But on Sunday mornings, they do a breakfast menu in addition to their lunch menu that we've been talking about going out to try for several months. And so I left my house at 6:30 a.m. to be in front of your place at about 6:45. We blasted off to Seguin. We got there a couple, 2.5 hours later, give or take, you know, doing a steady 75 all the way down I-10. So let me just ask you, I mean, you know, this is a barbecue restaurant that's ranked very highly by Texas Monthly. It was nominated, Ernest and his business partner were nominated for the James Beard Award for Best Chef Texas this year that was won by Street to Kitchen. So let me just ask you, I mean, is this one of the very best barbecue restaurants in Texas?
No, it's one of the best restaurants. I mean, it's certainly one of the best barbecue places without question. I mean, he landed right in the top 10 when Texas Monthly came out, and deservedly so. He does. I mean, he's really entrenched and knows his basic Texas Trinity. You know, his brisket is moist. It's got a nice bark on it. The ribs, he does a little sweet glaze with it. They're cooked all the way through, but, you know, there's just enough tensile strength on that so you can pull it away. You know, they're not fall off the bone, you know, which is, you know, not the way to go. His sausage is house made. You know, it's very laborious to do in-house sausage. And, you know, if anything, he really does all that work. And just there's great snap to it, incredible flavors. And he changes up, you know, the different flavors on those. I had gone before and like his chicken, I rarely order chicken anywhere, but his chicken is like some of the best I've ever had. You know, it's just fantastic. And so this was a special experience to go there on a Sunday and try, you know, the Sunday, you know, breakfast or the Sunday brunch, whatever you want to call it. You know, he's been asking me to come for a while for that. And, you know, you got to get up early, but we did. And was it worth it? Oh my God, you know, incredible, you know. And so the basics are great, but man, his barbacoa, which he, you know, he talked about, it's from his hometown, you know, of Uvalde, is a special kind of barbacoa, you know, delicious, great texture on that. We had lamb ribs there, which he did Moroccan style, you know, and some of these are R&Ds and some of them are like just Sunday specials. His huevos rancheros are some of the best I've ever had. It was just perfect, you know, perfect. My only comment that they don't care for is that it's just not close enough to my house to have on a regular basis.
You know, obviously it's one thing to make outstanding barbecue and the brisket and the pork ribs and the pork chop and the sausage that we all tried were all excellent.
Whoa, that pork chop.
But what's even more impressive to me is that then they turn around and just for this one day a week, they turn around and they do, like you said, they do the kind of the Uvalde take on barbacoa. He also served us a couple of lamb barbacoa tacos, a brisket and egg on a croissant. And they all come with their own, you know, salsas, and they make their tortillas and corn and flour. And so, you know, they're doing all this really just out of love for this cuisine and to kind of share something different with people. And I don't think that it's not like to make a whole ton of extra money. I think it's just because, you know, they love this food and they want to put their spin on it. And I just had so much, it was just so good to be in that building. My first visit to experience that food and to get to talk with Ernest a little bit. I had such a good time. And again, you know, it's a big push to get up really early on a Sunday morning and blast off down the highway, you know, only to come, you know, to come right back, right? Not to go to San Antonio for anything, you know, not as part of a larger excursion, but I'm so glad that we did.
Yeah, I was kind of cursing you just because it's, you know, so early, but, you know, I couldn't have been happier. Like, what a great experience. You know, we've talked before, you know, and I've certainly mentioned it, you know, the idea of cooking from your personality and cooking from love. You know, my experience at June and Street to Kitchen, coming out of there with this kind of almost inarticulate experience of emotion. And that's how I feel like this was. It's like Ernest is so committed to what he's doing. And it's so about who he is, you know, that it translates beautifully. You know, his commitment to quality is without question, you know, and he meets the mark, you know, the bar is incredibly high. The mollejas we have, the sweetbreads, you know, that can be a difficult thing to do, you know, getting quality, you know, sweetbreads, cleaning them properly, you know, and then doing this with smoke, man, it was fantastic. It was just delicious. Yeah, it ranks as one of the best dining experiences I've had this year. And that's a beautiful thing. Here we are coming into, you know, we're in December to have that. You know, it's just, wow, what a great experience.
Absolutely. All right, Michael, I'm going to say that does it for our restaurants of the week. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
All right, that does it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening. Join me on Thursday when my guest will be Kyle Noonan from Free Range Concepts.
Your name, but when you poop it sure don't smell like roses. Your number two burns the hair in my nose, but we fought hand in paw. Now your poop don't stink at all. Now that the air is clear, I'll treasure your front and rear, my sweet rose.
Instantly neutralize poop stink with Poop Fighter from World's Best Cat Litter for the world's best cat.